Right now, if this computer works correctly, we're going to have David Taratruk with the Media Beat. We'll have to see what happens here because I've got him on a different computer. Are you there, David?
I'm coming into live, and I hope I'm coming in live, even though it is a new computer.
Actually, you sound really good on
it,
as a matter of
fact. Much better.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I there's a good chance that I would sound better on a new computer, isn't there?
No.
But there's also equal chance that I would not sound so good on a new computer.
All right. So speaking of manipulation, hello, David Taratruk with the Media Beat. Did you do the intro? Or, okay. So speaking of...
You weren't listening to my intro?
Yeah, I heard something about MCI and phone numbers. All right.
I think he mentioned my name.
I think
he did. He did. And whether or not you were still there on the new computer and whether you were bored. But speaking of,
were you bored about her story about that dish, David?
Oh, I was fascinated by both of your stories. You're impeccable communicators, both of you. I couldn't possibly be bored when you're on.
Now that's diplomacy. That's a Libra. Happy, yes, very good. Good job. Good work. Now speaking of Libra,
at least he didn't call us horse face.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. After the things that have been said, you know, if I've called you like a Weasley, and you turned around and called me horse face, it's like, oh, that's so terrible. Whoo!
These are presidential insults of a presidential elevation. That's what.
My point.
Our president doesn't stoop to low argo at all. He has a very elevated form of discourse. Horse face is up there, don't you think?
And what's so great about that is because I happen to be very fond of horses.
It's a form of great flattery, isn't it? Call someone a horse face.
I don't know. If I call you fur face, it is. But you might think you're a Yeti, given the anxiety quotient of everybody and how sadly they suffer. I don't know. This is not my topic. My topic is Gmail and the improved, started over the summer, those basically... It's called Smart Response, but it's basically Response for Morons. You know, great. Check it out.
I stay away from Gmail as much as I can.
All right.
I happen to have an account, but only for certain uses where it's particularly useful. But,
all right.
And there aren't many of those. They're getting fewer and fewer, indeed.
So this is the point. The you complain about them. You figure out how to turn it off. Blah, 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 blah. But you completely don't focus on the fact that if they're providing those smart responses, they must be reading every single thing that goes in and out of your...
Well, some machine of theirs is reading it.
Something
sure,
is.
Yeah.
Right. So if you have any inclination towards not having all of your stuff riffled through at any given moment... Just it's a reminder, and yet people are so, and this is the point of this whole thing, they're so divorced from the actual pieces that go into something and so focused on the, you know, very, very end of it that I don't know how many actually informed people we have running around.
Well,
I mean, we have reacting people.
People in a vague way know that their stuff is being riffled through, as you say, and everybody is doing a kind of calculation in their minds: is this sort of intervention in my privacy? What you might call it an invasion if you didn't like it, but you're certainly aware of an intervention in your privacy, and it's a trade-off between privacy and whatever gain you're getting from the smart interaction that you're promised and often delivered too. I think everybody knows that we're living in a different world there is no such thing as complete privacy anymore. You can sometimes opt into certain things, certain processes that will preserve your privacy, but most of the time you must start with the assumption that everything's pretty much in the open nowadays.
And the thing that goes with that is let's say, for example, that someone who shall remain nameless has not spent much time on Facebook interacting with people. Because other people have interacted with each other and might be in a photograph of that person. There might be a photograph of that person. It's out there anyway. So it's unavoidable. If someone sends an email to me, I guess I am duty-bound to answer it. No?
No, you're not. But, of course, there's a kind of pressure to do so, almost a kind of instinctive reaction to respond if you're called in any medium. Just to shout across the street is likely to get your attention, and you may want to respond in some way.
Right.
That's what marketers through time immemorial have relied upon. And of course, that's the absolute basis of the success of phishing. You know, everyone when they get a message feels the need to respond to it. It's human nature.
We are. I was just going to say, thank heaven for human nature. Where would we be? Where would you, just your basic average media professional, be without human nature?
Yeah, well, there are some aspects of human nature that are not so
lovely.
Well, not so lovely, and raise very intriguing questions. For instance, let's start with the fact that our president is now, in the words of one former Bush administration diplomat, is now apparently accepting reality. This in the Khashoggi affair, I think it's coming to be known as the Khashoggi murder, basically. He's prepared to accept that the Washington Post contributor is now dead. But the interesting thing is how this whole story has swelled and taken on huge dimensions, even as the president has been trying to dampen it down, and because of his favoring of the Saudi regime, who are clearly, and I can say this fairly confidently now, behind the murder of the Saudi Arabian journalist concerned, Jamal Khashoggi. So it prompts in my mind, certainly, and others too have been thinking about the impact of Saudi's policies on the world at large. It's so intriguing that this one outrageous, egregious, indeed, you know, horrifying act has got so much of a groundswell, so much so that it even affects this oblivious president. And you compare that with how little public reaction there has been to their longstanding now outrage of the war they're conducting in Yemen. Hundreds of thousands of people suffering on the one hand, hundreds of thousands of people killed, and on the other hand, one, yes, much more prominent person, but just one individual. His death is suddenly a cause for extraordinary concern. I'm not diminishing his importance compared with the hundreds of thousands of Yemenis. Of course not. Every single murderer is a murderer and an outrage. But it's so interesting in terms of what you might expect in terms of human response and what you actually get. Now, journalists like myself are never going to be surprised by this phenomenon, I don't think, especially if we've covered international disasters. It's quite clear that, you know, the death and misery of millions of people count for little in many of the public, in many people amongst the public's minds, simply because of that deadening effect, really, that stultifying effect of very large numbers. I think it was Stalin who said that one man's death is a tragedy. Millions of people's deaths are statistics, and I think that's what we're observing now. Maybe this particular torture and murder has brought the situation to a tipping point, But it's been an outrage for some time, the behavior of the Saudi Arabia regime under the newish crown prince, Salman.
Yeah, and with all due respect, I would venture to say that if you got a bunch of journalists in a room and said, don't write about Khashoggi, or Khashoggi, I hear two, both, which is there a preferred, I mean, is there a preferred pronunciation?
There's a local pronunciation, Khashoggi, which distinguishes between the two G's. The first G is hard and the second G is soft. Yeah.
Okay. So if you got everybody in a room and said, listen, don't write about this one, write about the war in Yemen.
Well, of course, journalistic dictates are clear. Of course, I mean this is the most compelling story, and that again is human nature. You know, we do relate more to an individual tragedy or individual outrage in the same way that we do with it's that terrible word, relatable. It used to be used of George W. Bush in a horrifying kind of way. You know, the man you can have a beer with, and therefore you would vote for. But if a subject is relatable, in the sense that you can imagine this happening in your family or amongst your small circle, and what its effect might be on you, then it's going to be much more likely to engage your general attention and your focus. Hundreds of thousands of people dying in a distant land don't have that effect.
And as far as I can, sorry for the generalization, but pretty much as far as I can tell, more media, again, apologies to anyone I'm offending on this one, more media is interested in being relatable than on engaging any critical thinking brain cells. So, it's...
Well, you're not going to get me disagreeing with you.
No, well,
sure.
Thanks, but... good,
that is generally true. Yeah.
We can sit on a rocker in our golden years, saying, wow, oh, pity, this is just terrible. But everybody else is running... This brings me back to... It's like, people, if you think that you're informed about something... I hope you're not just getting your information from TV. I hope you've widened your data pool.
I've worked primarily in television all my working life, which is now appearing to be a very long stretch of time as I age, and I'm still working in television. I have to say that this is going to sound terribly disloyal. But I have to say, if you want a view of the world that's rounded, it's the last possible medium that I would turn to for it. As a consumer of media, it's just not my first resort at all. As you can imagine, it is simply common sense to say that you'll get a lot more information from a couple of pages of a newspaper, even, whether it's on paper or on your screen, than you would ever get out of an hour of television. It's sad but true.
And just this is tangential, but speaking of sad but true, I don't know if you knew the little Elle magazine quote, joke, unquote. They did an eyeball-catching headline, and it led to voter registration. And it caused a bit of an uproar. And they were saying, well, but it was just a joke.
Is this magazine's interference in politics?
However, and I'm just trying to figure out what fomented the uproar. I was like, okay, which...
aspect of the joke was
it was such
to outrage people. I can't imagine.
And so I think about what is done and what has to be done. And this, again, old topic goes back ages. What has to be done now with this surfeit of video, because everyone is their own videographer, to break through. And that's the real shame, because I'm absolutely fascinated with what's happened. This is again another tangent, but it all goes back to human nature. Once it was announced that digital ads, you know, stop regular advertising, make videos, make short videos. This is the wave of the future, and how and that Facebook rather inflated their what's the new word? Used to be metrics to make it, and suddenly we're turning around 2 years later, and it's like, oops.
But as somebody who's been in broadcasting his whole life, inflated metrics and listenership is common practice, whether it's digital or analog.
But for someone who
sure, newspapers, the ABC, the ABC numbers, the statistics of newspaper sales, always inflated,
right,
by all sides.
I'm not talking about the act of inflating. I'm talking about both of you. David, you worked in television, but before that you worked in print. Okay.
Alongside that, no, I've always worked on television. I've worked in television longer than any other medium. Okay. I began at 19, after all.
All right, but you know how to write things as well. Okay, I'm just saying.
Let me just pause for a moment and put one positive word in for television. You have to write if you're making television too, you know.
Well, I know that.
Maybe you don't have to. Well, some people get away with not doing it, but there's a lot of writing on television.
Yes.
You used to before reality TV, because reality TV cut down on the cost of writers, of all that stuff. I mean, the writers...
But it's still all written.
It is.
At least the outline is written.
Again, yeah. I'm just talking about...
It's scripted. It may call itself reality, but it is scripted.
Right, and as I've always pointed out, anytime you can put in... As long as you can edit it, that just blows the reality right out of the water. But
absolutely.
But your actual experience, Marshall's actual experience... You know, that permits you to make choices based on experience, whether or not statistics are being inflated. You don't even, it's like, it doesn't even matter. You just know that, but you're carrying on within a certain format. Marshall,
I just want to make clear that when there's ways to give over your listenership or your readership. If somebody asks me in general, how many people do you reach? I'll say, well, the signal reaches 200,000 to 300,000 people. Then they have to take that next step. Well, what's your listening? And that's when I come in with, well, it appears that this is, because these are numbers that are given to us, not really derived by us, but it appears that if you underwrite sometime in the morning show at any given hour, there could be 10 to 15,000 people at a moment listening. At midnight, there could be anywhere from 1,000 to 6,000 people. But I always try to explain to people that those are figures that are calculated and given to us. We don't have the money to actually track how many individual listeners we have. It's far too expensive for a small station. But we're honest about it.
Right, but none of this is the Facebook.
No, Facebook is not honest about it. They're like most major medias. They give you the number of people that they reach, which is gigantic.
Right, and you as a media professional, and David as a media professional, by this I mean someone who's just been in the business long enough to have filters that enable you to basically analyze information, know that.
And take everything with a pinch of salt,
exactly.
Especially if it comes from an organization like Facebook, of course.
Of course, and that's just a given. And all I'm banging on about is that not everybody has that capacity to just impose that given. And that's the whole point of this particular exercise. There are many people who are making choices based on the information they are being given without knowing that the information they are being given is a little bit distorted, she said kindly.
And I think you were making that point in reference to the fact that that advertising had suddenly, or not suddenly, but I mean, there was a kind of a fad for putting everything onto video, right down to what I'm noticing now. as I play music on YouTube videos just as background, that although YouTube made a promise not to to turn away from those 30-second ads that were so irritating to so many people, you now end up with 6-second ads.
That's
because
right.
In some ways, much more irritating because they arrive without warning, of course, and they conclude before you can get to the off switch.
That's exactly right. And in some really diabolical cases, there are 4 6-second ads teed up one after another.
Uh-huh.
And that's less than 30 seconds. There are millions of no that interruption is extraordinary. We've got a couple minutes left. I was going between sporting events last night. It was big sports night. But the fact is I spent more time hitting commercials for things, you know, adverts for things that I just, whatever. I don't need to see it all the time, do I? Apparently.
Well, repeating.
Rinse and repeat.
Rinse and repeat is said to be the key to getting a message over.
Well, speaking of having got the message, there is a war in Yemen that the Saudis
yes,
are prosecuting.
Yes, there has been for some years now. Yeah.
And it is worth...
And Americans are contributing to
it. I was going to say,
on the side of the
yep.
Saudis.
We have no high ground on that one.
Not saying that there is. Not just saying be aware. Know that in your... pronouncements, be aware.
Mm-hmm. Sure, and you know, and look at the roll call of offences. The Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia is also responsible for kidnapping another country's prime minister. Do you remember Hariri from
Lebanon? Yeah.
Spending a few unwanted days in what essentially is his boss's his political boss's country, the Crown Prince again, and being forced to resign. Well, spend the time there for a start as a captive, not as a guest, and being forced to resign his office while in another country. This is not normal political and diplomatic behavior, and yet, you know, until this tipping point, as I'm suggesting the murder of Khashoggi might be, they've been allowed to get away quite literally with murder on a vast scale. And I suppose it's likely that the overall outcome in the end will be that they'll be allowed to get away with this one, too. But the groundswell has taken place, and some things are changing. Even Washington think tanks, which are no sanctuaries of high principle when it comes down to cash, are sending their money back to Saudi Arabia, the money that gets invested in think tanks in this country for obvious reasons by the Saudi Arabians.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
Thank you.